Well, alrighty, gang. Welcome back to the Actor Self Protection Podcast. I am yet again your host, Mike Bolivar, and I remain your favorite former Fed. And I don't know if you can hear that or not, but right on cue, all four dogs started to bark when I hit the record button. So that's just what we're dealing with here. With me today is a new friend of mine. His name is Peter. He is from the East Bay Area, central to Northern California area. He is a retired research analyst in IT and was in IT advisory services. He is married with four kids. Peter, how are you, sir?
Doing well. Good to see you, Mike.
Absolutely. So we had some technical issues, but we old guys stuck together. We got through it. We didn't have to call a teenager to help us with anything, so we're pretty proud of that. We got mics and cameras and all that stuff working. So what exactly is what are IT advisory services? I've actually never heard that phrase that way. What does that entail?
Yeah. In the research area, I worked for a company that did research for both IT advice, you know, IT companies like HP, Oracle, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then we also advised large computer or large companies that needed to upgrade their computer systems every 7 years or so. And so they'd come to us and asking us, what's the latest software servers, data center information. And so as we upgrade and spend millions of dollars, are we making the right decision? So it was advising global companies on how to purchase, what to purchase, and it was advising tech providers on what customers wanted as far as services, you know, cloud services, telecom, software, etc. So it was a fun industry. I managed a team of about 20 analysts worldwide, traveled the world, advised governments and schools and businesses on how to use IT.
That sounds eminently interesting. I'm a tech dork, so I'm a consumer of YouTube channels of guys who review and unbox tech stuff. That's my dirty little secret that no one's supposed to know. But I tell you, I worked for the federal government for a little over 25 years. We could have used your services over there because we were always four generations behind whatever the average consumer was using, never mind like a major business. It really hamstrung us for a long time. When I started in 96 in San Diego, our office had a PC. It had one PC. It sat at a station, you know, and it was like reserving time with the king to get 5 minutes on that thing to run a criminal history check or whatever.
Right.
And everything else was MS-DOS, green screens, and dot matrix printers. So that's where I started all the way through. Convertible laptop is the last thing that I had, which was a great idea, right? Yeah. The idea being you could, you know, pop it into a dock at your desk and use it like a desktop and then pop it out and go in the field and write reports or do whatever you had to do. It's just that it was the biggest dog of a computer I'd ever had in my life. And it was wicked slow. And the battery, I'm not kidding when I tell you, I'm sure the government paid $800,000 per laptop because it's the government. Not to go on a tangent here, I'm sorry, but I have to get this out. I have to get it off my chest.
Not far from the truth.
The battery life was maybe 90 minutes on this thing. And that's just doing light tasks. I wasn't rendering 4K video, right? I was just writing a Word document for a narrative for a report anyway. Right. So maybe in your retirement, you can go advise the federal government on how to buy computers properly because they're completely clueless. Did you ever work with the government or anything like that?
Oh, yeah, we did. Yeah. The state of California quite a bit and police departments all the time trying to get information on how do we store the data we record and what are we going to do with all this? How often should we purge it? And what, you know, those kind of issues.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot of legal questions there, too, because if, you know, once you purge something that it's considered evidence into perpetuity. So digital evidence is a whole, that's not new anymore, but it was a whole new thing. And I'm sure there was a lot of hurdles to jump. I almost said hurdles to jump through. That's hoops. Hoops to jump through, hurdles to jump over. I'm sure that was a lot of work to figure that out because, yeah, once you've, you know, if I interview you as a victim of a crime or a witness or a suspect, that's evidence. And I can't just throw it out willy nilly even after the case is done, which is, anyway, that's an aside.
That's right.
So, with all that said, you live in the Bay Area. Is the Bay Area, I don't know how often you get into San Francisco proper, but is the Bay Area as ridden with homeless people and encampments and all the sort of thing that the rest of the country has been told that it is. Is it that bad or is it overblown in the media, in your opinion?
My opinion is it is that bad. I'm extremely disappointed having lived here 36 years and to see the condition of San Francisco. I really stopped going up to the city about 10 years ago. My wife loves it. It is a beautiful city, but the homelessness and the crime and you know, we were up there with friends, just about 10 years ago, and decided to stop doing it. Had our car broken into and laptop stolen and cameras and all that stuff. So it is as bad. They're trying to clean it up. Now that it's an election year, they can look really good. It's like, oh, crime's down. We're doing all these things, but it's really disgusting. And that's sad to see, because it's such a beautiful place.
Yeah. Growing up, you heard about San Francisco. I grew up on the East Coast, and it was like this idyllic, you know, wonderful place. You'd see a Dirty Harry movie, and you know, they filmed them in San Francisco, and those in the streets were clean. Everything looked very nice. Wow. And people, you know, the birds were singing, people were laughing. Crikey, what was I going to say? I do remember, it's kind of a talking point for people on one side of the aisle, but did they really clean up the downtown part of San Francisco for a day or for a few days when the president of China came? Is that a true story? And like, cause you didn't see a dirty bum anywhere on the streets at all. They just disappeared overnight. Is that accurate?
They did. They came in and had teams of people moving them and relocating them and then putting up fences so they couldn't come back. And so all this area for downtown, it was the Asia Pacific conference, and they had all these leaders in, and they specifically cleaned it up, and they weren't hiding anything about it, saying, this really looks bad. We have to fix this. Well, it's like, we could have done that years ago. Why don't you?
Yeah. I mean, look, this is a hard truth from a grizzled vet of law enforcement. That's me, by the way. The vast majority of people on the street suffer from mental illness and are drug addicts. It's both. And there's no, you know, super duper easy solution to the problem, but just letting them be all the time is not the answer. It just isn't. They need help and they need structure in their lives, but most of them refuse to go to a shelter. They refuse because there's rules at a shelter, right?
Yeah.
They can't do drugs. They can't do all the other sort of stuff that they do. I don't have all the answers, but I certainly know that what has not been working has not been working. So we need to reconsider that. But yeah, like you said, unfortunately it's an election year, so they'll clean it up temporarily. And then you've seen this cycle for 30 plus years. It'll go right back to the way it was. All right. Enough about that.
Yeah.
Cause that's depressing. So your story happened about how long ago? In our pre-interview, you asked me, if you should give some context from some video the context you didn't have in the middle of the event. And so you can start wherever you like, whatever you think helps the story get told in the most linear fashion.
Sure.
It was at your home. So tell us who lived at your home, who was there, and what happened, and give us the whole nine yards.
It was a Saturday, October 12th, 2019. So about 4.5 years ago. And it was just me and my wife. Our four children are grown and gone, two in LA, two in Mesa. And so my wife had been down in Phoenix visiting family down there, and was just coming home that Saturday about 8:30 at night and was going to meet me at home. I was up at the temple, the Oakland Temple. We're members of the Church of Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints.
Okay.
And I was up at the temple, came home that night. We were going to try and rendezvous here around 8:30. So I was excited. I hadn't seen her all week and such. But what happened, I'll start with the videos. We're talking about the issues the Bay Area is having with crime, drug problems, and homelessness. The Bay Area Rapid Transit, BART, stopped in a few miles north. Well, they've extended it down through to Santa Clara County to meet up with the light rail system for the San Jose, Santa Clara, which then goes on up to Daly City and reconnects with BART. So
okay. You
can get all the way around the Bay. So long story short, this new system had just opened up. And based on the surveillance, this young man gets off the BART. We discovered this because he had all the tickets in his pockets afterwards. Walks down a mile and a half from the station, randomly into our neighborhood, up my street, and finds a nice, cool, shady spot on my front doorstep and decides, I'm going to sit here and sleep. So he immediately stretches out in the shade of my front doorstep and goes to sleep. I had a buddy dropping off a car for my nephew that I just purchased. Mm-hmm. And so when he drives into the driveway, parks this little Golf, the guy gets up and walks away like, oh, I was just, you know, looking around, not really here. So long story short, my buddy sticks the keys to the car in the flower pot in the front porch and leaves. And which that was a kind of standard procedure. It's a safe little place. And it's like, okay, nobody's going to take my car. It's only going to be there about 2 hours.
Right.
Anyway. So the kid sits next door at my neighbor's house, my neighbor's got what's called a sitting wall around his front yard, and he's just sitting there kind of watching the sun go by and people. And so when my buddy leaves, he goes back over to the front and starts looking around. He went through my mailbox, went through the, and he ended up going through all my mail, reading everything, finding the key in the flower box, thinking, huh, went over, checked it, unlocked the car, got in the car, listened to music, sat around, opened the hood. He's a curious kid, just was looking at everything, going through everything. And he doesn't have any shoes on. He's walking around in his stocking feet.
So real quick, let me interject. So you say kid, kind of describe him for us, generally describe for us. Did he look like a kind of just a homeless young person, or did he look more like a crook, like a gangbanger or anything like that? Or kind of give us your impression of him.
No, he looked like a 22, 23 year old college kid that clean cut hair, clean shaven for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And so it turns out, yeah, he was from Indiana, been kicked out of his family home as a kid just recently, moved out to Oakland to live with friends he thought he could stay with, and they kicked him out, it turns out, because he'd stopped taking his meds and was going a little psycho and neurotic and bipolar, whatever he was doing. Anyway. So that was it. I wouldn't have known it. Was, you know, I just thought he was kind of a lost kid. What do you need? Some help? Turns out he was quite lost, off his meds. Didn't have any place to go now, and was just wandering around.
Now all this information you found out or you discovered after the incident, after the fact. That's so, right. So kind of walk us through the day of, as though you didn't know any of that. Let's pretend like we didn't have this conversation.
So what happens? Yeah, let me tell you. So my wife and I are going to meet up. I'm out and away. She gets home first, about 8:30. So that guy had showed up around 4:30, and events started happening from there. My wife shows up around 8:30, and pulls in her car into the garage and sees the other car, the Golf out there, thinking, oh, Peter must have gotten Joe to drop that off. This is great. You know, he's home already. She's thinking I'm home.
Right.
But I drive another car, and she had something rationalized in her mind, like I left that car somewhere else. Anyway, she comes out of the house, notices a few things out of place, is looking around and saying, oh, Peter must have had friends over, you know, because there's like display books on the coffee table, which are open. Mm-hmm. There's different things shuffled around in the kitchen that I would never do, but this guy did. Mm-hmm. And Peter's already home. Okay, well, this would be great. I haven't seen him all week. She goes upstairs, and the shower is going. So she goes, oh, Peter's already home and he's showering. Oh, this will be great. So she gets all excited and drops her bags, comes. And in our bathroom, the master bath in the back of the house, the shower's in the far back corner and there's a pocket door. So it's pulled shut. Excuse me.
No worries.
It's pulled shut and she thinks I'm listening to Selena Gomez, which I never listened to her, but she's thinking,
what point is normalcy bias creeping in here? I mean, you know, if you're not watching on the app, folks, neither myself nor my guest Peter looks like someone who would be voluntarily listening to Selena Gomez. So I'll just leave it at that.
No, I was shocked that she goes, well, I thought you're listening, you know, to Selena Gomez, and maybe you're kind of getting, you know, in the mood. And it's like, well, okay, yeah, it's really. So long story short, she gets ready, brushes her teeth, gets in her jammies, and gets in bed. About 10 minutes later, so shower's going on and on, thank goodness, on one side. I come home, come in the front door. She doesn't hear the garage door open or anything. I come up the steps, and I'm in a little white shirt and tie from the temple. Well, hi, sweetheart. She looks at me like, who's in the shower?
Yeah, and, that's a good question.
And I'm looking at her like, well, I don't know. Who is in the shower? And she's just panicked. She goes, I thought it was you. I said, okay.
Understandably so. I would be a little out of my mind for a moment there as well. That's crazy. Yeah, so
her heart's just raced, just like looks panicked, flush. And someone's in the house. I said, okay, go out to the car, get in the car. I'll be right out. And I go around to my bedside table where I keep a gun.
Mm-hmm.
Got my handgun. I keep a Smith & Wesson M&P 9 compact. And so I come back around and I open up the bathroom door and the shower has just stopped. And I get on my phone, called 911. Hi, Peter. This is the address. And they, okay. I said, someone's in the house. We don't know who it is. Where? describing the shower in the back of the house. They said, okay, are you armed? I said, yes. She says, is there any way out for this guy to go besides through you? I said, no. She goes, okay, then he's trapped. I said, right, he can't get out. She goes, then we're going to back you out of this. You're going to get in your car with your wife, and you're going to go off and park across the street. There's a cabana club, a pool club over there with a big parking lot, so I could get out quick. So I had, before that, before I got in 911, I told the individual I was here. I said, I know you're here. You know, don't, you know, I'm home. I right. just want him to be alert. So he was scared. He had nothing, no clothes to put on. He had, you know, nothing. So I listened to the operator, keep her on my 911, saying, okay. She goes, I need you to back out of the house, go down to the car with your wife, park across the street. Do you have the, you still have the gun? Yes. Unload it, put it in the trunk, wait for the police to arrive. They're on their way. So between the time I got on the call and the time the police arrived, it's about 8 minutes.
That's really impressive for that area of the country. Yeah, that's quick.
I'll tell you how impressive it was. I'm sitting there and watching it. And so they quietly come up, lights going. And there's I live along a breezeway. So right next to my house is a, 12-foot wide breezeway going to the next street over. So people could have access to the pool club from all around.
Okay.
And they pull up one car in the back end of that, another car at the top of the street, another car at the bottom of the street, and then two more. And out pop the guys with full SWAT, bulletproof vests, helmets, everything, ARs, and canines. So they're starting to just stock the house or you know, get it covered.
Surrounded.
And, yeah, and I'm still on 911 sitting in the parking lot across the way, and I could see through my front windows the individual was coming down the front steps to the front door.
Okay. Relaying that to the dispatcher?
I relay that to the dispatch. And so sure enough, the two guys in front give it, and immediately they're like right on it. He opens up that front door and they say, stop, police. And he steps back like, what am I going to do? And then just comes out with his hands up and gives everything up. And
he is had he the clothed? Everyone wants to know right now. The listeners are screaming at their phones. Does he have clothes on?
Yeah, he did. He ended up putting my wife had some clean clothes in there. So he put those on, a pair of sweatpants and a Curry, Steph Curry t-shirt and different things like that. So wow. I was walking out in this strange outfit and they get him, they frisk him, they find the keys to the Golf. He was planning to take it and drive away. And so then we just sit and watch, and then they go through the whole process. Who is he? What ID does he have? They ask me if we know him. They ask us to call our four kids to make sure that they don't know him. Because they thought, well, maybe one of the kids gave him approval to go see mom and dad. They'll bring it in. And which we would have. I mean, kids needed, we put a lot of kids up for the night, but none of my kids knew this kid. He was from Indiana and didn't know anybody. So once they cleared that, then they, fully arrested him and took him in. I then went back and looked at all the video and kind of put the timeline back together for the police. They had a full page. I've got a documented sheet with all the, Every 5 minutes, 2 minutes, 30 seconds, whatever it was.
Analyst.
Yeah. Yeah. For every. Exactly. So we had it all done and they were pleased, and they ended up charging him with felony burglary, auto theft. Cause he took the car. And then when we came home, it changes from burglary to a home invasion. And so once we're in the house and he's already in there so they had all these things they could get him on. So then the DA calls and wants to negotiate. What do you want to do? I said, get him back on his meds. Get him some help.
Yeah.
He's just lost. He's not a criminal. He didn't take anything out of the house. I didn't like him driving the car, but he just basically took a shower and borrowed some of my wife's clothes and spent the day there cooling off and staying comfortable.
So what was the end result with the DA? Did they just try to get him the help he so obviously needs, I hope.
Yeah, they put him in jail for a year was the explanation they gave me, with a restraining order not to come near our house again, to get on his meds, to start seeing a psychiatrist or psychologist, and to help with his, because he seemed very OCD in the videos we had. He was just very curious, looking at everything, and highly unusual.
So he opened all the mail that was in your mailbox. Do I understand that correctly?
Yeah. Opened all of it, read it all, looked through it, put it all back in. read the ads, like that, you know, like, you know, what's Safeway selling this week, you know?
Yeah. Wow.
It was amazing. Very detail oriented. You look through everything and just had very good details. And even when he was looking through the car, he went through everything in the car and under the hood and opened all the doors and the trunks. I kind of call them a curious little monkey, but,
Did the police indicate to you or the DA tell you if he was under the influence of anything or he just wasn't taking his meds, or do you know for sure? Because that sounds like methamphetamine-induced behavior. Minutia becomes very interesting to someone who's on meth. Not in the later stages when you're losing your teeth and, you know, you obviously have used way too much meth, but early on.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a quick aside story. My partner and I knocked on a motel room door looking for a criminal one day. He wasn't there, but one of the guys inside of the motel room, this is Mike mm-hmm. Haynes, by the way, he'll love the story. And I'm not telling the whole story because there's parts of it that don't belong on a family-oriented show like this. But one of the guys had a VHS VCR in the corner of the room, sort of next to the TV, but on the floor. And he had it broken down to the smallest cog, the smallest springlet. And it looked like an exploded diagram on the ground. It's actually really impressive. And there's DVDs everywhere of the adult variety, and they're strewn all over the place. And I said, man, what's up with what's going on? What are we doing? What's happening with that? Are we watching? We're watching some adult films. And he goes, no, I couldn't get the DVD player to work. Now, if you remember, it's a VHS VCR. Minutia is important. They'll you see them write out little screeds and tiny little letters on a piece of paper or, break things down to their smallest part. That's pretty common behavior. So yeah. It wouldn't surprise me if that was in the mix. So let's talk about the event. Oh, I'm sorry. You're going to say,
well, they never said anything what he was on. They just said that he's supposed to be on meds and he wasn't. And that's why, and he wasn't behaving well. That's why no one wanted to keep him around. And so.
Yeah. Let's talk about the incident itself, because I think there's some lessons to be learned here. Let me start by asking you, was there anything you could do differently on that day? What would you do differently, if anything? And if nothing, then nothing is a fine answer too.
No, I wouldn't have done anything differently. I have a brother that's concealed carry for quite a few years, and he's had the experiences where once you display your gun, you know, criminals flee, you know. It's just like this simple brandishing it. And he was recommending that I, you know, make sure the boy saw the gun. And he said, I would have brought him out naked, put him in the front yard with my foot on his chest, waiting for the police to arrive. I said, yeah, okay. That's great. Appreciate that advice,
brother. Yeah.
No, as far as what I would do, I've got some lessons learned. Number one, we didn't have a Ring doorbell. If I had a Ring doorbell, I could have seen what was happening at the front doorstep and that someone's hanging out there and sleeping on my front doorstep.
Right.
I found that out later. I could have had a motion sensor in the house that would have said someone's now in the house and nobody's home. It's like, that would have been good. We normally have all of our windows locked. When he jumped the fence over my neighbor's, you know, stepping wall, he checked all the windows and then finally found the one window that we used back there to let the evening breeze in. And we thought it was locked, but it wasn't quite latched at the top.
Okay.
So he was able to pry the screen and pop it open. So I would have checked all windows. The other thing was just what you noticed, the normalcy bias. My wife noticed so many things out of character, but kept just like, no, Pete, he'll listen to Selena Gomez. He'll do this. I don't do any of that stuff.
Right.
Anyway, and then what I really liked was the way 911 helped me. In that, you know, what am I going to do? Because I was amped up when my wife runs out and I'm standing there like, okay, is this guy big? Is he small? Is he armed? Is he psycho? I don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. She was very good, quickly identified. He's cornered. Let's get out. We'll take care of it. And help me just outsource my violence to someone else, which made my wife thrilled. And because that whole guns in the house is another story.
That was a debate at some point between you two?
Yeah, because when we've been married, what, 35 years, 25 years into the marriage, she'd always been no guns. And it was an emotional issue because she grew up with in a neighborhood in Utah where three kids found their dad's firearms and either killed themselves or a sibling.
Oh, boy. Yeah, it's terrible.
I couldn't get her to overcome that emotional connection to guns and danger. And so I gave up the fight. It's like, darn it. I grew up with guns in the house, but I didn't have any. They were my dad's in Oregon still. So long story short, 25 years later, I'm reading my NRA magazine in bed. This is great. You'd love this. And I'm going through, I was like, oh yeah, Winchester 300. That's a beautiful gun. And she goes, oh, are you still interested in guns? I said, yes. She said, oh, I thought you gave that up. So I reviewed with her our history. I said, well, no, we've talked about guns three different times, and every time it was too emotional for you to get over. So I said, sweetie, I stopped. I realized you couldn't handle it, no matter what I tried to say. She got just teary and cried and said, I am so sorry. I said, no. I said, she goes, so you still want guns? I said, sweetie, on the way back from your funeral, I'm stopping at the gun store and I'm buying four guns. And I rattled them right off. Boom, 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 boom.
Right.
And so anyway, that was back in 2013. So she agreed if I go get training, then I could have guns. And I went to Front Sight for a number of, 4-day hand trainings, took my sons to one each with me and my nephews and been to tactical shotgun training and all that. So, it's been a nice eye opener. She's still not pro gun. She still doesn't believe it's necessary. And so that's a little different. I never thought I'd be married to an anti-gunner, but it's just she's got an emotional reason for it, and I respect that. And she's been very good about me getting trained, having things in the safe, practicing the safety. I've got my palm pepper spray. Thanks to you guys, I carry that because I don't want to have to use the gun.
Sure.
I don't want to use it. The best, it's like this worked out really well in our house that I didn't have to use it. It would have been horrendous for my wife if I had had to.
Well, it would have been horrendous for everybody. I'm not saying this about you. You seem like a very level-headed, reasonable person, but I think there is a percentage of people out there in our 2A sort of community in this orbit who have the impression that how their shooting is going to go and they're going to shoot the bad guy and, like I say, blow the smoke off of their still warm smoking barrel. Yeah. And go have a cocktail. And if you can do that, that's not good. The post shooting environment, I've been in it more than once where someone's dying of a gunshot wound. It's not pleasant. It's terrible. It's something that stays with you for the rest of your life. And it doesn't matter how justified the shooting was. That doesn't make the aftermath any less awful. I'm very glad that you didn't have to use your gun that day, but I'm glad that you had it in the event that you needed to use it because you didn't know who was in that shower. As an aside, I promise you, some of those police officers who were in a two-man car or a two-officer car were looking at the details of this call, and they're like, yeah, it's a burglar. The husband comes home, and there's the wife's in bed, and someone's in the shower. Okay, they probably had an idea this was something. This was not what appeared. But with that said, the only thing I would have done differently, potentially, than you, and I'm not saying you did anything wrong, but this is just my perspective, is I don't think I would have announced my presence to the guy. I think I would have gotten my gun and backed out as I'm calling the police. But that's because I have 30 years of law enforcement experience. So I think you handled this remarkably well. The reason being is if I can get myself and my family out of the house, especially preferably while armed, that guy can take 20 more minutes in that shower for all I care. He can break my TV. He can take a knife to the bed. He can do whatever he wants. I don't mind because everyone is outside and safe and around the corner. But it sounds like the dispatcher did a good job. What I don't love on the dispatcher's part, and this is such a California thing to say, is unload your gun, put it in the trunk, break it down to the smallest component, put the recoil spring in the right front seat and the frame in the trunk and, the slide in the rear. Like, that's such a California thing to say. Like, look, if you're calling me saying there's a burglar in your house and you're armed, I'm like, okay, good. First things first, stay armed. And here's what I want you to do when the police show up. Don't have it in your hand. Don't do anything crazy that'll draw their attention. But other than that, I think the dispatcher did a pretty good job of guiding you on what to do, because this is something people don't think about. Mm-hmm. We don't think about, if I come home and there's someone in my shower. When I read part of your email to my wife and I got to the point where your wife realizes it's not you in the shower, my wife's eyebrows went up like, oh boy, that's crazy. That's a crazy story. And it really is. And I think there's a big contingent of people in our orbit who would be like, heck with this guy, throw him in jail and throw away the key and all this sort of thing. And I think you're right on track with your analysis of his situation. jail tends to make people better criminals. That's just the way it is. If you can avoid, if you can divert, especially a young person, away from jail, depending on the crime, obviously if they murder a busload of Girl Scouts, that's not happening, right? But I'm saying something like this, if you can avoid putting them in jail or prison, it's almost always better for that person and for society as a whole, because juvenile hall in jail will make you a better criminal. You have to harden up in there. You have to learn how to fight. You have to do all these things that are unpleasant, but that's just the reality of jail and prison.
I agree. I have another thing.
Yes, sir.
Because at that point in time in Alameda County, 2019, they only had about, it's like 2 million people in the county, and they only had 100 CCW holders. So Alameda County sheriffs are responsible for, permitting those out. Long story short, after Heller and Bruin and things changed here, I immediately applied for a concealed carry because I couldn't get one because I wanted it for self-defense. So it took a year and a half for me to get to go through the process. Cost me $720 between classes, ammo, fees, psychological evaluations, all the stuff. And so then it's good for 2 years that I get to do that again. And
the whole process?
The whole process, I think. Well, it's forever changing. It's gone from 2 days to 2.5 or 3 days of training. I think they're, So it's always changing. So I don't know what's going to happen. I have CCWs for Florida, Nevada, Arizona, and Utah, had for 10 years since I went to the front site training. Mm-hmm. And so those renewals are cheap and easy, $25 online, and I'm done. And they last for 5 to 7 years. Here it's $700 and it's going to last for 2 years.
Yeah. Me and Gutowski talk about this all the time. And, me and John, Neil, Stephanie, all the people at Active Self Protection have this conversation all the time. It would be wonderful if everybody had a job where they could take off time to go and get all this great training. It would be wonderful if everybody had money and resources for all this sort of thing. But they don't. It would be great if the government were always benevolent and, only made sure that bad guys didn't get CCWs or whatever. And the government always had everyone's best interests in mind. That's not the case. And it will never be the case. So when you get the government involved in whether or not you can defend yourself with a firearm, it's always going to, it's rarely is it going to be a perfect process. I like the idea that anyone who isn't otherwise prohibited from having a gun can carry a gun, period. End discussion. In a perfect world, everybody gets training and everybody gets all this other stuff, but it's not a perfect world. And the example I use is, in the middle of Baltimore, a single mother of two little kids who's working three jobs and barely making it by, doesn't have $700. She doesn't have $7 to put towards a permit. And she really needs it. No one needs it more than people like her who couldn't even defend from, from a attack with fists, never mind a knife or a gun, which are prevalent in Baltimore, unfortunately. So, I think the answer is obvious. It should be very, very easy to get that permit or preferably not needed at all. Like Arizona has constitutional carry or whatever you want to call it, permitless carry. And the anti-gun folks, God bless them. I think a lot of them mean well. And I think people like your wife have a genuine concern, and they're not trying to take your rights away. Most folks, they're afraid. They have an emotional attachment to the idea of a gun. Mm-hmm. But I think they predicted, blood in the streets, mass murder everywhere. It's going to be like the old West. It's going to be the OK Corral. And that just hasn't materialized. It's been several years now. It has not materialized. That's not the case. If you get pulled over in Arizona, and I'm sure other places that have this sort of system, and you tell the officer, and again, it's discretionary. You tell the officer, hey, just so you know, I'm a CCW holder. I have a firearm. It's in, I'm carrying an appendix or whatever. The vast majority of the time, they're going to be like, okay, don't touch your gun. I won't touch mine. That's kind of a non-issue. And they really do. They don't generally get concerned. Now, there are exceptions to that. There are officers who want to disarm you and disassemble it, unload it or whatever, which I'll never understand. And here's why. I'm going on a tangent again. I'm so sorry, Peter. Oh. Here's why. It's the same idea as if you go to a place, right, and they say no guns allowed. So what does that mean if you're carrying? You either go home, right, and lock up your gun, or you can have a safe in your vehicle, and you can go back out to your car and now unnecessarily handle a loaded gun in public, right? To put it away. Like it was where it was fine. It was in the holster. It wasn't, no one had to know. No one was going to get hurt from that gun. But now we're causing people to handle guns unnecessarily. I think the whole thing is rather silly. At any rate, I don't want to leave anything out. Peter, was there anything you wanted to add before we part ways, sir?
No, I think that's that was it. I do appreciate this opportunity to share it with you. It was a happy ending, and so things are good now, and I appreciate this chance to share it with you.
Absolutely. I'm glad you wrote in. Peter, don't hang up because we have some admin stuff to do after the call is done. If you're watching this on the app, thank you so much, by the way, for subscribing to the app. We appreciate it. If you're listening, wherever you might be listening, do me a favor, go to your app and figure out how to leave us a 5-star review and a five-star rating and a review. And, you know, tell us what you like, tell us what you don't like, because this show's ever evolving and hopefully getting better. So thanks for listening. Peter, thank you very much, sir.
Thanks, Mike. Take care.